Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, at least for the next few minutes, I ask you to forget everything that you've ever read about relationships, parenting, managing your business, or promoting your career. Because our next guest says getting more attention from your spouse, respect from your children and teenagers, cooperation on the job is not about how smart you are at books or on the computer. It's all about instinct. And guess what? It's the same instinct that motivates your dog to be naughty or nice. You know, dogs call on instinct to get what they want. And in the same manner, you and I as human beings can employ instincts to our advantage. And our guest is award-winning author and workshop leader Camilla Gray Nelson, and she knows animals and their instincts very well because she grew up on a farm around Piggy the cow, Classy the horse, and Nellie the dog, and presently she's a renowned dog trainer and also runs a kennel, and she's known as the Dog Talk Diva using the natural approach to dog training, and she's author of the award-winning bestseller Lipstick and the Leash, Dog Training a Woman's Way. And she's here today to help us sharpen our human instinct, not just to train our dogs. Hello, Camilla, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Great. Thanks, Roy.
Well, to start, what do dogs and we men have in common, and what's the best way for you women to train us?
At the risk of being too sexist here, but honestly, what I've learned in my life growing up with animals, it's more and more clear every year I train, which is going on my 25th year now, is that the basic instincts in the dog that I work with are the same instincts in myself or in my husband or in my employees. Namely, one of the main ones is, you know, dogs do what they enjoy and they avoid what they don't.
Yeah.
They're very uncomplicated.
Yeah.
Just like people.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you look at yourself, if I look at my spouse or, again, my employees, they do what they enjoy, too, and they would rather avoid what they don't. My husband would much rather watch the Super Bowl than mow the lawn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just human nature. Human nature is another term for animal nature.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
We're all animals at heart, right?
We are all animals at our basic core of instinct. Human beings have a greater, more developed brain and sense of morality, and they can be altruistic, and we can overcome our instincts.
In some cases, we do.
and you know what? What you just said there was true. In some cases, we can. You know the phrase, first impressions count?
Yeah.
That's just a reference to the fact that we instinctively react to something or someone or some place by our instinct,
and it is
lasting. That is a reference to our instinctive core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why is yelling at your spouse or your teenager seldom, if ever, work? And what's a better way to get what you want, both from your dog and from your human contact, your family member?
Well, you know, a lot of people, a lot of therapists and family therapists and even dog trainers will keep telling people, stop yelling, stop yelling, stop yelling. But they never tell you why.
No.
I'm here to tell you why. It's because in the animal world, emotional control is a marker of leadership.
Yes.
And the converse is true. Emotional instability, loss of emotional control, is a sign of weakness.
That's
and so when we
true.
Yell in frustration at our dog, or at our kids or at our husband or our spouse, instinctively the being on the receiving end of that yelling is reacting to the yelling as they would react to a weak imposter, a weak insecure being in the social group. And the instinct in animals is to ignore weakness, distance yourself from weakness, turn away from weakness, because think of it, every animal is driven by the need to survive, yes?
Yeah.
The need to survive. You have a better chance of surviving as an animal, human or dog, when you partner up and stay near and follow a strong individual.
Yes, that's
and
so
you
true.
Have a worse chance of surviving, better chance of being lunch or dessert if you're hanging around the weakling, because that's the one that gets picked off, you see?
Yeah,
so it all goes back to the most basic of instincts. So when you're training a dog, the best way to get what you want is to speak very quietly, but be very very clear about what your goals are, and be quietly persistent about getting those goals. And then when you get some approximation of success, praise. Because, again, the animal in the dog, the animal in your family or your workplace really is drawn to behaviors that are pleasantly rewarded.
I like the way you're talking about the workplace and the office, how much it's like a dog pack.
Oh, my goodness.
How do we survive and prosper there? I guess it's
obviously
not yelling, but I like the fact that in your promotional material, I think you talk about how important it is to set boundaries at the workplace, both to your boss and your peers and stuff, so that, you know, they can see where it's going too far, like, the boss who continues to assign more work when you and unrealistic deadlines when you're already overwhelmed. But how do you handle that kind of thing and survive in the workplace?
Right. That is now, it gets very complicated. Now I give workshops on this kind of thing. It gets very complicated on an organizational chart if you are a legitimately higher or lower in rank and status, because animals follow different patterns of behavior to get what they want, depending on whether they are high status or low status.
Oh, I see.
So it gets very complicated. Don't have time to get into that now. But what well, I will say about the work about the workplace is this: the last thing you want to do, and the thing that will guarantee you failure in your conversation, let's say with your boss, because you are lower status.
Yeah,
you are legitimately lower status. When you communicate things that frustrate you, things that you need, you know, need to change or improve, you discuss it in a calm and pragmatic manner, not in a frustrated or angry manner.
Yeah,
because again,
it's not
frustration,
confrontation is not going to solve your problem.
No, no, because it makes you. Is this a word, unrespectable? Is that a word? Because your boss is just as instinctive as the dog, reacting before they think.
Yeah.
You must come across as wise, as reasonable. And anger, frustration, stomping your feet and throwing a hissy fit, threatening to quit, will get you nowhere instinctively.
When you get an unreasonable demand, it makes so much sense to calmly explain why, you know, you really can't do that in the time suggested, and to offer some alternatives and,
offer alternatives, yes. Now, that gets more into the human thing and more into my realm as a boss. You know, I've got 24 employees here, so and they're all women. Imagine that. Whoa.
Wow.
but that's what I look, and I'm getting off the subject of dogs and my book and all of that, but I will tell you that when an employee comes to me, calmly lays out the issue and has a possible alternative in mind, my ears are open and I am cooperative.
Yeah.
If someone comes to me just bitching and moaning, it's unproductive.
Yeah,
it's unproductive. It's just venting, and that venting is fine, but have an alternative.
Yeah.
But with the dogs, dogs are so interesting when it comes to, I mean, you can learn, if you know what you're looking at, you can learn everything about yourself, about your relationships, about people, by studying your own dog.
Yeah.
It is just fascinating.
I think it's fascinating. In your book, you mentioned that training your children is a lot like puppies in training, and that when you used to do house calls years ago, you noted that women who couldn't control their dogs also didn't have very good control over their children.
Right. I'd walk up the sidewalk, you know, before I rang the bell, and right when I heard the dog barking and carrying on, the mother would start screaming, "Johnny, shut the gate!" And I went, "Oh, I can see the problem already, and I haven't even met the dog."
Yeah.
Yeah. And what you said earlier, Roy, about boundaries.
Yeah.
Dogs just, the easiest way to calm a dog, I mean, I do a demonstration called instant obedience.
Oh.
Instant obedience. In 5 minutes or less, I can take any dog, crazy, jumping, barking, and I can have them sitting quietly, never even uttering a command. I don't tell them sit. I don't tell them stay.
Mm.
All I do is I take the leash and I start restricting their freedom of movement.
Oh, nice.
Start setting boundaries, physical boundaries of where I can allow them to go and what I allow them to do. They calm down like I gave them a sedative.
Oh, no, that's,
it's all about boundaries.
Yeah.
A wild, crazy kid and a wild, crazy dog are just the same. Just what they're doing is they're looking for those boundaries.
Yeah,
how far can I go?
The experts always say that dogs and children and people want to know what their boundaries are, and they're much more comfortable if they know those and if they're consistent,
yes,
obviously. But
yes, because we are designed as a hierarchical social mammal to live in groups, and groups have to have order.
Yeah.
Nature abhors chaos. Nature is all about order. Night follows day, you know, winter follows fall. Order, predictable order, order, order. And so the group is organized into a hierarchy. There's a leader, there's middle management, there's the mailroom, you know, and everybody has a job.
Yeah.
And it clicks along. It clicks along. But that order is determined by boundaries.
Yeah.
The dog that has the most freedom and the fewest boundaries is the top dog.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so often organization charts rule over everything, and that's not the best way it should.
Well, it is. Well, they do rule. They do rule. But there's ways to get what you want, even if you're a subordinate in the organizational chart. That's the tricky part.
Yeah, that's what we try to talk about all the time as well.
Yes, yes.
Well, tell us about your book, Lipstick and the Leash, A Dog Training a Woman's Way. I think, you know, beyond just learning how to train your dog, I think it's a fascinating read in terms of an approach to life. As you point out, it applies in human situations as well as training your dog. And tell us how listeners can get that book and a little bit about it.
Well, if you go to lipstickandtheleash.com, there's excerpts from the book and a little bit more about it. And I'll tell you, the reason I wrote this book, a couple of reasons. Training dogs for 24 years and working with well over 10,000 clients, most of them women, because that's the statistics. 74% of every dog-owning household in this country leaves primary dog care and training to a woman. They all had the same problems. They weren't being taken seriously by their dog. The dog who is expecting a male leader. Because nature is male-dominated when it comes to leadership. And there's very practical reasons for that. It's not politics or anything else.
Yeah.
But there's very practical reasons for male domination in the animal world. But be that as it may, women were all making the same mistakes and coming across as weak, and therefore they were not being respected by their dog. But it gave me a chance in the beginning of the book. The first 8 chapters are not about training dogs.
Mm.
It's only the last 2 chapters.
Yeah.
The first eight chapters, I build my case about how nature works. I am a farm girl. You mentioned that in your intro of me. That's how I was raised. I did not have good little girlfriends. I did not grow up in a city or a town or suburbs. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. And before I started school, all of my friends had four legs. None of them spoke.
I love the story of Piggy the cow and
exerted
influence over the other cows.
Right. Piggy was the undisputed queen of my father's dairy herd. Undisputed queen. She was so cool. She reminded me of Arthur Fonzarelli in Happy Days. She wouldn't run to the hay trough. Oh, no.
Yeah.
She was too cool for that. She would saunter. And if the other little heifers wouldn't back away, she would just sort of stand there, give them the eye, maybe lower her shoulder and her head and give them a little bump and send them flying, and then she would eat her fill, hence the name Piggy.
Yeah.
But I learned in retrospect, as a dog trainer and as an adult, what incredible lessons that cow taught me about power. Power is about the confidence, the quiet resolve, the setting of boundaries unapologetically. That's a key word, setting boundaries without apology.
Yeah.
Just setting boundaries. And so I set that case up in the beginning of Lipstick and the Leash, and about how dogs think and what their instincts really are. They're not Lassie. Lassie is a figment of Hollywood. It's not what your dog is or should be. And so I really wanted to paint the case of true animal instinct, what dogs are, what's weakening you as a person, not just a woman, and then go into dog training with that foundation.
I would be fascinated to read that book as a man, not just as a woman, because I
think it tells
all of us a lot about leadership or about, exerting influence effectively. And like you say, dog training really is a metaphor for life.
Yes.
And it demonstrates an excellent pattern for succeeding in life as well as in getting your dog to behave, I think.
Right. The foreword was written by a man.
Oh.
Very famous dog trainer,
well-known,
well-respected in his field. And he loved the book and suggested it be written, read by men as well as women, obviously. But women needed it so much, and my specialty is helping women, therefore the title. But you're right, Roy. Everyone should read this book.
And you can get that book, I guess, through Amazon.com and other
sources. Oh, absolutely.
Well.
Amazon. Or through lipstickandtheleash.com.
Yeah, I would recommend the website because I know you have a sign up to receive email updates, and next year you're planning an Alpha Girl workshop on effectiveness in women, which sounds like something that would be fascinating for women to attend and just to keep up on what's going on in the world of dog training for women and that kind of thing. I highly recommend they go to your website.
There's another website where I have all kinds of training advice and life advice through instinct, and that is because I'm known as the Dog Talk Diva. That's my online name.
Oh.
So dogtalkdiva.com
is
my blog. There are links to it back and forth between the book site, though. So if you went to Lipstick and the Leash, you can also get a toggle over to Dog Talk Diva.
Yeah, okay. But, well, that sounds like another good dog site to go to.
Oh, I'm just full of information.
I'm going to recommend that to my dog, I think. But well, thank you so much, Camilla, for joining us today, and best of success in your book and your upcoming workshop next year, and all the other good activities, and also, of course, in your kennel with 24 employees. And how many dogs do you have on that kennel?
Well, it ranges from 30 to 80. So
wow, that's
when we count daycare, and yes, it's quite lively. Yes.
Well, I also want to thank all the dogs out there who've tuned in, and thank you for serving as role models and harnessing our instincts and employing them to our advantage. And now, just nicely ask you, will you please get down off the couch, and please no peeing in the house.
Was that for me?
No, that was for the dog in the audience.
It's been a pleasure.
You can stay on the couch.
Thank you, because I am the alpha girl.
Thank you very much for joining us, Camilla.
Thank you, Roy.
Well, before you think that our entire program today went to the dogs, let's talk about something completely different. I want to talk to you as leaders, present or inspiring, and that includes small business owners, managers, or executives. You know, both out of necessity and desire, more and more members of the baby boom generation are working longer and seeking to retire at an older age. At times, they report to bosses young enough to be a son or daughter. You know, this can lead to an impending clash of generations. We don't always think alike. There's potential to breed resentment. It could hinder cooperation, and it could engender stress both for the young bosses and their aging subordinates. You know, we generations don't always think alike. Most of us over 45 have prospered for years in traditional top-down hierarchies. We're accustomed to be told precisely what the job is and how to do it, and we're accustomed to the dictum, with age and experience comes authority. Can you imagine our shock and discomfort when some hotshot 15 or 20 years our junior suddenly becomes our boss? On the other side of the coin, young managers' anxiety and frustration is readily apparent. Will someone my father's age or my mother's age take me seriously? Or how to convince a senior citizen to abandon their Stone Age notions and behavior patterns? Well, as a senior representative of America's graying workforce, I'm here to bust a few myths about the baby boom generation and even older. Myth number one, anyone over 50 is a technological dinosaur, incapable of adapting to the fast-paced, continuously disruptive innovation that's present in today's marketplace. That's a myth. A lot of us over 50 are very eager to learn and do new things. Myth number two, members of the baby boom generation all enjoy the same culture, the same thoughts, and want the same things from life. Heck, we're just as different as Generation Y or the Millennials or anyone else. Each one of us is our own individual. Myth number three, baby boomers are spoiled, self-absorbed, a me-first generation, highly resistant to change. Now, that's definitely not true. And people keep thinking we haven't adapted at all since the 60s when we rebelled against the Vietnam War. That's kind of silly, isn't it? Myth number four, most of us over 45 resent working for or taking advice from Generation Y or Millennials, and that we're not good team players. There's no necessary truth to that one either. And myth number five, it's not worth training or developing anyone over 55 because we can't adapt to change, and anyway, because of our short term left, it's not worth the investment. That's just plain silly, because you want your workforce, whatever their age, to be up to date and capable of doing the best job possible. You know, if you're over 50 and on the job, or if you're seeking employment, have you had to battle any of these myths that I just described? You know, if I was 55 and found myself working for a 32 or, say, even a 42-year-old boss, here's eight requests I would ask of my boss, nicely, of course. Request number one, please tell us in plain English what you want from us, and then ask for feedback. You know, effective two-way communication between generations is an absolute necessity. You and I always don't always agree or view the world from the same perspective, but let us know in concise terms your end objectives and routinely seek our input before you assign us tasks. And keep us informed of the big picture, performance trends for the company as a whole, and looming challenges. Who knows, we just might be able to help. Our second request, respect our years of experience both in the workplace and in life in general. You know, not everything worthwhile is learned on the job. And whatever the immediate challenge, it's likely that one or more of your senior colleagues, like myself or my colleagues, have been there and done that. We provide a one-of-a-kind link between the past and the present. In evaluating middle-aged employees, always look beyond our formal education and job experience in the immediate past, and help us to uncover and utilize inherent capabilities that we may have honed through years of responsible adult living. Just for example, motivating our offspring as teenagers, that certainly is difficult as motivating employees, either subordinates or fellow co-workers. And how about managing a family budget? That's not totally unlike managing a department or even a company-wide budget. Request number three, make us feel special. You know, we may have been passed over for the job that you now hold, and worse yet, we may be painfully aware, we may even have been told that we have reached our career plateau, and we don't want to just coast into retirement. You know, everyone wants to have meaningful work to do and feel like they're important. To help overcome resentment, illustrate time and again why we still belong and are important to the overall corporate mission. How about possible mental vacations or career sabbaticals for passed over employees to help us define just what we want out of the rest of our lives and whether we can find satisfaction with the current company we're with? Sometimes a simple thank you will be enough for a job well done, but at all times we also want to participate in the good times if the company is earning a lot of money. And if at all possible, please request our input before important decisions are made which impact our workday. And when asked, most of us are more than willing to train and mentor our younger, less experienced colleagues. In fact, that makes us feel pretty darn good. Here's my fourth request. Offer training and development that we need to prosper in our current jobs and to advance in our careers if that's our goal. You know, just because we're 5 or 7 years from retirement doesn't mean we shouldn't have the best tools to keep us involved and offer variety and new challenges to our workday so that we don't grow stale, and offer the training and skills development that we need. Regardless of our age, keeping us up to date is a wise investment. And to stimulate our minds and freshen the workday, how about multi-generational special projects? You know, we just might have a lot to add to those. How about task force assignments, multi-division assignments where we get to work with our peers and come up with exciting new ideas to help the company prosper? How about, here's a fifth request. Try not to lord it over us that you are our boss. You know, we're used to the traditional command and control organization structure, and we respect fully your authority. To extent possible, though, let us breathe and let us set our own daily agenda. Give us assignments and deadlines that are necessary, obviously, but leave it to our discretion to complete the assignments as we please and then judge the results on the merits. You know, we'll support you to the end so long as you are competent, impartial, non-judgmental, and, of course, totally ethical. Nobody wants to work for a boss who seeks to bend the rules. And we respect you most as coach if you help to sharpen our focus and develop our talents. And if you're a great coach, age doesn't really matter that much. The sixth request, please acknowledge and respect that at our age, we have a lot to lose. You know, we've invested several years of our lives and our careers in this particular company or employer. We may have accrued pensions and other retirement benefits, but even if we don't, you know, these days it's not easy for a person over 45 to find a new job other than maybe flipping burgers at the local fast food restaurant, and we don't want to do that. I'm certain you understand our overriding concern for job security. And believe me, we're not asking for a free ride, but please help us retain jobs as long as we meet clear performance objectives, which are agreed to in advance, and so long as company finances remain sound. And if you must reduce staff, can you please offer fair and generous voluntary early retirement offers before we get into painful layoffs? I know that's not always possible, but being unemployed in these times with all the long-term unemployment that exists is really a tough thing for us. Our seventh request, above all else, please do not stereotype us or assume that none of us is adaptable to change and new beginnings. You know, each one of us over 50 is a unique, living, breathing human being, just like you. We are not all stereotypical baby boomers. Oh, I hate that. Well, I don't hate the term baby boomers, but I hate when generations are stereotyped and that we're all put into the same little box. While respecting our privacy, why not seek to get to know us better? At this point in our lives, what career track do we seek? Fast, medium, or slow? How much longer do we plan to work, and what are our plans after retirement? What special interests, needs, and challenges do we face outside the workplace? You know, we may have less challenges now than we did when our children were young, or we were just starting out a family, or sending them through college. Maybe they're still going through college, but, you know, it really helps to know what our challenges are. And how open are we to bold new challenges and experimentation? Are we happy with what we're doing now and just happy to continue doing that the rest of the time until retirement, or would we really like to try something new? And how much are we willing to put in extra hours or other sacrifices to move forward in the organization? You know, it's perfectly fine to just want to keep doing things the way we've been doing, so long as we're doing a good job and getting the job done. But get to know what our objectives are and get to know us as a person. And the final request, number eight, and finally, forget the 65 and out mandatory retirement. You know, we've all heard that 60 is the new 40 and 70 is the new 50. If at all possible, present us with flexible early or late retirement options. How about part-time employment or consulting assignments for highly capable and young at heart contributors who reach 65 or in their late 60s, even early 70s? You know, I have an acquaintance who retired at the age of 65 and then was brought back as a consultant to design a highly unique quality control system for a multi-billion-dollar manufacturing company. And he loved every minute of it, and the company loved the services he provided. We don't all retire, you know, we don't retire all our skills simply because we turn 65. The other side of the coin, if possible, can you offer early retirement or part-time employment opportunities for those with ambitions outside the workplace or needs outside the workplace that just don't want to hang in there full-time until a mandatory retirement age? We all know the demographics. More and more baby boomers are around than the next generation, Generation Y, to replace us. And as the gap between availability and demand for young talent widens, gray hair at the temple is becoming to be viewed more and more as an asset rather than a liability. A prime example is information technology, where truth be told, as IT pros retire, they often carry irreplaceable industry and company-specific product knowledge, project and process management expertise, and plus they have the seasoned judgment required to weigh facts and make optimal decisions. Somewhat ironically, more and more these days we see laid off or recently retired pros lured back as paid consultants to train, mentor, and collaborate with less experienced younger colleagues. Wouldn't it make sense to retain and motivate these invaluable contributors as full-time employees rather than have to lure them back as consultants? Well, for a whole lot more on motivating and getting the most out of your seasoned employees, I highly recommend my book, my second book, Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You know, the subtitle of the book says it all, Recreating and Re-energizing Lagging Enterprises and Participants Midstream. And we have several chapters in the book on innovative leadership and inspiration for employees of all ages, but we concentrate on employees like us, those over age 45. For example, we offer the 16 E's of midlife employee motivation. You have to read the book to find out what those E's are. We also offer the 10 commandments of collective renewal. We describe and propose enterprise-wide mental vacation employee retreats, how to conduct those, and how to follow up once employee desires are made known. The goal, obviously, is to find out what your employees really want out of the rest of their careers and how well they fit in the company and what you have to offer. We have chapters on empowerment without disruption. We talk about assignments of decision rights and responsibilities to employees at all levels, and that just doesn't just mean the top. And we talk about fresh starts for capable displaced managers and passed over employees. And you know, we include a number of real life case studies, and we also have a number of participation exercises, both for enterprises large and small. And I would highly recommend my second book, Wake Up Captain and Crew, if you are a leader, or if you work in an enterprise that's falling behind, or if you're involved with a startup and want to learn the ins and outs of making the startup into a successful business and a lasting business. Also, if you don't relish your current position, maybe you're down in the ranks, the book will give you some ideas on how to change or make recommendations to your present boss or what to look for in a new employer. And to preview my book, Wake Up Captain and Crew, please go to our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. That's all one word, middleagerenewal.com. And while there, you can obtain your free gift, which is our Middle Age Renewal Training Mini Course, both for individuals and for enterprise leaders. And that's our program for today. Please tune in next week when we'll shift gears again and we'll talk or we'll launch our series of our next programs all about relationships, relationships with your boss, with your spouse, with your children, with people in general. And thank you so much for joining us today on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.